The Dr. Taz Show.
The podcast. Dr. Taz.
Your good health journey starts now. Here's Dr. Taz.
Welcome back to the show, and we are continuing our discussions on fertility and infertility and how to start that family that you've always dreamed of. Joining me today is Dr. Tina Coopersmith. Dr. Coopersmith is an OBGYN and reproductive endocrinologist. She's been practicing since 1995 in the San Fernando Valley area and also takes an integrative approach to fertility, which you guys know I love. Welcome, Dr. Coopersmith.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
Well, we're pleased to have you, and we just want to jump right in and really help. I know I see a lot of patients in my integrative practice who are struggling with fertility and trying to understand, you know, why it may not be working out for them. I'm curious from your vantage point, because I know you see a lot of these women, what do you think the biggest causes are of infertility, and do you think it really is specifically an age-related issue, or are there other factors involved?
Oh, great question. So I think, obviously, age is a big issue, as many women are delaying when they start their family. So we see many, many more women now waiting till their mid-30s to have children, where in generations past, many people started in their 20s. So age is a big issue, but I don't think it's the only issue. There is definitely other factors, including diet, and then the associated weight issues. Underweight and overweight can both contribute to infertility factors. What foods you're eating can also contribute. So you might be normal size, but if your diet really is less than nutritious, I think your body might be missing certain vitamins, minerals, and nutrients, and I do think that probably affects fertility. We also have a very fast-paced lifestyle these days, and that may have an effect. I wonder, too, there's lots of use of gadgets from the outset, so people often immediately go to ovulation detector kits, temperature taking, and all that, because they want to get pregnant and they want to get pregnant quickly. But sometimes I wonder if that adds a level of stress and anxiety that then
makes everything.
For all the better timing, they then have other issues that come from that. So I think it's complicated. I think sperm is often a factor, and then diet, nutrition, and toxicity exposures can affect men. So there are a lot of different reasons that people can have fertility problems.
Would you think of, I know you've got an integrative background, as do I, would you think of infertility almost the way we think of autoimmune disease, where you really have to look at everything? You have to look at the gut, you have to look at nutrition, you have to look at diet, you have to look at stress, you have to put all those factors together in the context of age. I think we can't be unrealistic. Is that, do you see success when your patients, you know, sort of take that approach to infertility? Tell me what your experience is there.
Well, I think, again, having a holistic approach is really important. Infertility, in a sense, is a symptom. And so then we have to go beyond the symptom to figure out why you have that symptom. And sometimes it's clear cut. Someone could have had an infection when they were younger. It blocked the tubes, and everything else is perfectly normal. You know, they eat right, they exercise, all that, but blocked tubes are blocked tubes.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, genetically the man was born and there is no sperm because of a problem that's genetic. That can happen in women as well. So I don't think all infertility is lifestyle related, and yet lifestyle is a huge component of infertility. And so I think similar to things like autoimmunity, and I think what we eat, how we live our lives, absolutely can affect the health of our body. And if our health is sub-healthy, in a sense, that are additional factors that need to be looked at. On the other hand, if you're 45 years old and going through menopause, that's actually normal. And yet, if you're trying to have a baby, that's going to pose a problem. So
very, very, very good perspective there. And, you know, thinking through as well what you said, like underweight, overweight, diet, nutrition, maybe dice that up for us a little bit. Is there an ideal BMI? Do you go by BMI? Do you go by body fat percentage? Do you have some ranges where you try to target women that are trying to become pregnant? It's a little bit of what we advise in practice as well. And then even from a dietary standpoint, if you had to name one or two big dietary issues that you keep seeing in practice, what would those be?
Great question. So the easiest thing to measure is the BMI, the height to weight ratio. Body fat in, you know, index is probably, might be more accurate regarding your health, because you could have someone who's very muscular who works out, their BMI may be a little high. So you have to look at it holistically, but in general, we tell people a BMI really of 20 to 24 is ideal. In terms of diet, if there's one thing I'm going to push out there, it's a plant-based diet with lots and lots of fruits and vegetables. I think those are crucial, and very often people are having 1 to 3 servings a day, and we really encourage really up to 9 servings a day. Of a combo of fruits and vegetables. You know, if they can have, you know, 5, 6, 7 servings of vegetables and 2 to 3 of fruit, they are chock full of, you know, anti-inflammatory, antioxidant, healthy nutrients in their diet. And then vitamin deficiencies that we just seem frequently is this vitamin D deficiency. So I check for that, and nowadays I've started to check for ferritin as well. And we also highly encourage supplementation with a multivitamin, especially folic acid or folate.
All right, listeners, that was a ton of information for my listeners right there, and I'm just going to repeat it to make sure they caught it. So body fat is ideal. BMI you could look at and try to gauge there. That's your height versus weight. Remember, you don't want to be underweight or overweight. Some of the key dietary things to really be concerned about, it's no longer just 5 servings of fruits and vegetables a day. Really aiming, especially if you're on this fertility journey, for at least 9 servings of fruits and vegetables a day in a highly plant-based diet. And then last but not least, looking at things like vitamin D, iron, the B vitamins. I see that a lot in practice as well, specifically, you know, folate and methyl B12 and even B6. So really gauging for that. Now, what are some of the tests that you would do to gauge a couple's experience with infertility? Things that you would like to look at and see when you're, you know, taking it to the next step of trying to determine what their best treatment option is?
Great. So it's fairly standard. We want to check their egg quality and quantity. So we want to check by history if they're ovulating, and then usually estrogen and progesterone in the luteal phase, which is a week after you've ovulated. We want to check your hormones. Ovarian age is kind of how soon we can predict your ovary is going to eventually get into menopause, and that may not correlate with your biological age. So we look at both. So we do ultrasounds of the ovaries to do what we call an antral follicle count, meaning on ultrasound, how many small follicles inside of which should be an egg are visible in the ovary. That's what sort of your eggs that are competing for ovulation in any 1 month. So we look at, see on ultrasound what your ovaries look like at the beginning of the cycle. We'll often get pituitary hormone levels to know how hard, in a sense, is the pituitary working to help that ovary ovulate. So FSH and LH are hormones, and we want to see them in conjunction with estrogen levels. And then there's another hormone called anti-Müllerian hormone, and that's made by the eggs that are going to grow in the future, so 6 months, 6 years from now. So the more AMH you have, probably the later your menopause. So those are markings of ovarian age, and then obviously, are you still ovulating, and what are your cycles? Then we look at the pelvis, so your cervix, your uterus, your tubes. Again, have you had surgery on the cervix? Does it look normal? And there's a test called a hysterosalpingogram. Everybody just says HSG because it's too long of a word. And basically, we're checking the uterus and the tubes. And so a catheter gets put in the uterus or in the cervix, And either X-ray dye is used with fluoroscopy, or we now use ultrasound and air bubbles and water and bubbles, and we can see the inside of the uterus looking for fibroids or polyps or a misshapen uterus. And we can then, with the bubbles, see that the tubes are open and the bubbles come out through both tubes. And we've then now put water behind the uterus, and we can get a nice visualization as well of the pelvis and the ovaries, because they're now floating in water that has gone through from the hysterosalpingogram. So we check the uterus and the tubes. And then the male, of course, needs a semen analysis.
All right, so that is a thorough and detailed workup. So you're looking at hormone levels a week after ovulation, looking at AMH levels, looking at FSH levels and the pituitary as well, obviously looking at the pelvis, then doing the hysterosalpingogram as well. So for my listeners, I hope they're writing this down. This is like a checklist. So it sounds like a very exhaustive, detailed way of assessing, you know, fertility and fertility status for a couple, along with, of course, a semen analysis. Once that work is done, what are the options for a couple? What are some of the things that they have to choose from when they're thinking? And this is assuming they've already tried and they've done diet modification, they've worked on lifestyle, and they're sort of at this point now, like, where do they go next?
Yeah, so in general, we tell women, you know, when they're under 35, to give it a year of trying, unless they have very irregular cycles, then we say get thee to a doctor immediately. If you're over 35, we encourage people to go in after 6 months of trying, not because they're more fertile and should get pregnant faster, but we have more time. We don't waste that second 6 months if something is wrong. So In general, depending on what is wrong, is how we cater our treatment. So if a couple presents and the woman has very erratic menstrual cycles and we feel she is not ovulating, then lots of times we'll start by giving her some medicines to make the eggs grow and help her ovulate. Sometimes, if that's the case, especially if she's young, we'll do that before we even do the rest of the workup and give them 3 months mm-hmm. of ovulating. And if they're mm-hmm. still not pregnant, then go on, check tubes, check sperm. If a woman's older, we want to check it all. And literally within one menstrual cycle, you can get your entire diagnosis done. So then in the second cycle, you can start treatment. If the sperm is abnormal, so if the count is bad, motility is bad, or they look like funny-looking sperm, then we talk about, is there anything we can do to fix the sperm? So he may see a urologist for a better analysis if there's something physically abnormal, obviously diet, nutrition, or sometimes hormones. And mm-hmm. then if not, we will talk about taking sperm, concentrating the sperm, separating it from the semen, and putting it in the top of the uterus. That's called an IUI, or intrauterine insemination. Mm-hmm. If that fails, or the count and motility are so low, or the woman's much, much older and her chances, therefore, are limited, we will talk about taking sperm and directly shooting it into an egg, and that's in vitro fertilization with the ICSI procedure. And that has revolutionized the ability of men with very low sperm count, sometimes even no sperm in the ejaculate, only sperm in their testicle. And they can, with a needle, get sperm out of the testicle and impregnate their wives' eggs in the petri dish. So
wow.
Male fertility has really come a long way with the advent of in vitro fertilization and ICSI. Obviously, if the tubes are blocked, we could potentially do surgery to open them up, but nowadays IVF far surpasses pregnancy rates for people with tubal blockage. So the first IVF back in 1978, the first successful one, was indeed, it was designed for people whose tubes didn't work because maybe they had prior tubal pregnancies or prior infection or things like that. So IVF, if your tubes are blocked, and then unexplained infertility, about 20% of the time we may come up with unexplained infertility. So they're ovulating, they have sperm, tubes are open, uterus looks great, now what? and will usually offer a combination of fertility drugs to make, instead of one egg a month, several, and combine that with, again, either putting sperm in the uterus, which is intrauterine insemination, or if that fails, or again, they're older and they want to be more aggressive, going right to in vitro fertilization.
So a lot of options out there, and it sounds like a lot of it varies based on age and, you know, the status of sperm and all that other good stuff. Now, I know I've met many patients in practice who even that has failed them, and I think that's where third-party reproduction comes into the picture. I'm curious, you know, what's your experience been with that, and how does that work, and is that a viable option for couples, you know, trying to get pregnant and start a family?
So third-party reproduction is amazing. So once we were able to take fertilization out of the bedroom and into the laboratory, it really did open up a lot of avenues for how many people it takes to make a baby, right? You need an egg, you need a sperm, and it has to grow in a uterus. But any combination
of whose
egg, whose egg, whose sperm, and whose uterus can be utilized. You know, many women are coming to the table late and trying to have babies, and their ovaries are not really working and helping, and they can take a younger woman's eggs, and that's called egg donation, and that has really helped lots of women who, you know, can't get pregnant because they've gotten older. Sperm donation has been around for years. They've been able to freeze sperm for years, so using someone's sperm from a sperm bank or maybe a relative is an option, and it can be done with insemination in the uterus or insemination in the petri dish in IVF. And nowadays we have the ability also for surrogacy, so you can actually get a donated embryo from somebody, and you as the intended parent could be the gestational carrier of someone else's embryo. Or you can make your own embryo, your eggs, your partner's sperm, and someone carries it for you. So perhaps you've lost your uterus because you had cancer, or perhaps your uterus is riddled with fibroids or scar tissue. Someone else can carry your genetic kin. So, yes, yeah, surrogacy and egg donation and sperm donation are lovely ways to make a family.
There's so many options, essentially, for couples and for women today in terms of starting a family. And Dr. Cooper-Smith, you've been wonderful in trying to explain all the choices to us. I hope my listeners have benefited from this. Now, sitting where you sit and having the experience that you have, what is the one piece of advice that you would give my listeners in terms of their fertility and their fertility journey?
Be an advocate for yourself. So, I mean, know your body, treat it well at all ages, and really, I would say, be aggressive at knowing what your fertility status is. So if you feel like it's taking a long time and your doctor is not very open to doing a full fertility workup, ask for a consult with a specialist. If you're young and you think you're really going to delay fertility for a long time, nowadays you can consider freezing your own eggs so that perhaps if you're much older, you can be your own egg donor. And so I would say being aware, knowing your body, and listening to your gut, and getting educated about your own fertility options at any age, I think is the number one advice.
And I think that is great advice, and we're hearing that from so many experts in the fields of women's health, that the biggest gift you can give to yourself as a woman is to understand your body, understand what it needs, and take good care of it, whether you're 16, 20, 30, 45, 50, 60, it doesn't matter, but just take good care of it. And you know, we're like sort of a mixing bowl. We got to have all the right ingredients to be able to do what our body needs us to do. Dr. Cooper-Smith, thank you so much for joining. If my listeners want to find you or learn more about you, where should they go?
Womensreproduction.com.
That should be fairly easy to remember. So womensreproduction.com, and thank you for taking time out of your afternoon to join us today. I hope our listeners have learned from your thoroughness and your detail about what this fertility journey can look like and what the options out there are. And for my listeners, again, get educated, learn as much as you can, and keep moving ahead. Thanks so much.